Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we get into podcasts, I have a Discord channel. Link is in the description. Please sign up, get involved. We talk about everything podcasts, everything music, merch, tickets, all of the good stuff. Yeah, it's just good. It's a good spot to get everyone in one place, really. Secondly, if you do listen to this podcast and you aren't subscribed, please subscribe. And also, if you'd like, it would be really helpful if you give us a review on whatever platform you listen to, or if you're watching on YouTube, give us a little comment. Just means the podcast gets more views, really, and more listens, and more people will kind of come to the podcast community, as we call it. Podcast time. Mathro. I came across Mathro probably 6 months ago, maybe a bit longer. Actually, by the time this comes out, longer, maybe a year ago. I got put in touch. Well, I got shown his music from a friend of mine who I was writing music with, and kind of got a little bit of his backstory of, like, he's a musician, he's been working in the industry for a long time, and then started to do his own project. Got talking to him on social media and just asked him to come on the podcast. I really like his music. His music's amazing. It's very unique, and he also performs live, which I really, really enjoy. So yeah, I just wanted to get him on the podcast, introduce him to everybody that listens to the podcast, and some of you may be fans, and if you're not, by the end of the podcast, you will be. He's a lovely guy, great conversation, and his music is amazing. So without further ado, Mathro. Mr. Mathro, what is cooking?
Will, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, mate. I feel like I kind of made it.
Mate, thanks for coming on. Like, I think we've got a mutual friend that I don't think you know that we have a mutual friend. Do you know Mitch Jones?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, so Mitch and I do quite a bit of work together, and he mentioned you and ages ago. And then I just started, like, checking your music out and followed your music for a while and just loved it. And then just kind of did a bit of digging and, yeah, just wanted to get you on, really. Your music's amazing. And obviously there's, like, the link with Tisha as well. Yeah, man, how's life?
Oh, sick, man. Yeah, it's really good, man. I'm, like, just kind of in that writing process at the moment, trying to get things sorted for next year. I've got my EP coming out. We'll be, like, totally out hopefully by, like, Feb-ish.
Yeah.
So I've just been kind of getting my head back in the writing game, trying to figure out how to write music again, you know.
I know how it is. Is this the EP that started with the Love Me one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I've got like a kind of, I guess by the time this comes out, I should have had most of the songs out.
Yeah.
And then there'll be like one more, I think, in like, I think it's Feb.
How many records?
Like five.
Nice.
So it's all like, yeah, it's like five singles basically. I was kind of quite keen. I didn't want any of my music getting
destroyed getting by the algorithm.
Yeah, because I was like, man, I spent so much bloody time on this. There's no way I'm sacrificing this shit, you know? It's not happening.
It's so crazy how algorithms and streaming works now, that if you don't release it as a single, your just music just gets destroyed.
Yeah, it's so annoying. But it also makes it harder because you kind of end up writing things that have singles, you know, and you kind of change things potentially from like how you might have done it if it was kind of going to be listened to as a body of work, you know. It's a little bit different. So
let's talk about that, because that's really interesting. Yeah, that you say that, because I think it is so true. Like, everyone's just writing bangers rather than like music to listen to, I guess. Interesting musical pieces. So, like,
yeah,
are you classing this EP as like an album, I guess, or like just a smaller album?
That's kind of how I look at them, because it's like five tracks. I try and like hit a few little things that I like. Like, I've got the two-step tune that I like. Kind of got my kind of ballady thing, my kind of sad thing, a happy. I kind of like try and have a little range on each one.
Yeah.
Which obviously is cool, but yeah, you have to accept in doing that some of them just aren't really going to work as well as other ones. Mm-hmm. And I guess you just hope that, you know, Spotify and the streamers get it as well. And that if you put something out that's a bit left, they're like, we don't think you've like fucked it. Or like,
yeah,
oh, can I swear? I forgot.
No, you can swear. It's fine. It's so weird, isn't it, how music is nowadays? Because I remember, I don't know how old you are, but I remember like growing up and like, you'd go and buy a CD and you'd listen to that CD over and over again. You'd listen to an album.
Yeah.
And you'd have that album, especially if you like started driving, you'd have that album in your car or in your like Walkman for ages, and you'd just rag the shit out of it. And now it just feels like, although I love the concept of an album, I love albums. They're my favorite.
Yeah.
And I still listen to albums, but it just feels a little bit like you just get lost. Like, certain music gets lost.
What I think it is that now what it seems is, what it feels like for me anyway, is like you do your album for like your hardcore fans, or like the proper fans, like the people who will hopefully come and, you know, pay some money to come see you one day and will buy the merch, and that the singles is kind of for like everyone else that hopefully brings them into your project
fan base.
I still think I think like there's still, it feels like, I'm not 100% sure yet, I don't know what the labels would say, but it does feel like there is still a place for kind of your slightly left field things, or
I agree,
like not even like, you know, like the filler tracks, but some shit that you just like, that you just do it and you're like, well, they like the rest of it, then they'll probably like it as well, hopefully.
because I guess, like, let's say for instance, like Bonobo, right? I'm pulling up his album now. And like his last album, The Fragments, that came out last year, like, to be fair, everything's done very well, like in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, there's his biggest record on there did 27 million and his worst record did 2.6 million. To me, that is not a failure at all.
No, it's not.
But like, it's really interesting when, but do you think that's just purely because he's built his fan base around albums?
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't really think about that. I mean, probably, but also I guess he's been around so long that if you're listening to him, you probably know quite a lot of his music.
Yeah.
I think. And you might new people would probably stumble across, like the singles or the I think he had that song with Joji, which I guess like
was you big. Know
that his name, I think is that. But like, yeah, it's a hard one. I feel like, yeah, he's probably got such a massive amount of like proper fans at this point.
Yeah.
Where he probably could just do album type tracks. He could probably sack off the songs, just do instrumentals and people would still absolutely love it.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the Chems album, the latest Chems album that came out September. And like, yeah, apart from like one record that obviously was the Beck record, I don't know if you know the album or if you listen to the album.
Not yet.
It's fucking amazing. But like every record's on like a very similar stream set, mm-hmm. which kind of means to me that they have like just a core fan base that just listen. Yeah, they got 1.9 million yeah. followers on Spotify, which yeah. means that like they get a core amount of streams per yeah. release, no matter what they put out. But it's different, isn't it, for like the likes of like you and I, where we were kind of releasing music as singles from the get-go on streaming platforms, yeah. and it kind yeah. of, we rely on what's the word, like playlists,
yeah, basic metrics, yeah, yeah. It's all of that kind of is so influential,
yeah.
And even it seems like, you know, like the length of songs, like it's just gone like lower and lower and lower until now that like I've heard, you know, labels wanting like DSP edits that are like 2 minutes or something.
Yeah, I know. I was actually looking at your stuff today though, and I was like, the All Right record has done pretty well. Is like, that's nearly 5 minutes long. That's fucking long for a Spotify.
Yeah, no, I was thinking like, you know, if it was half as long, would it have
double the amount? Yeah, there's this playlist that's, I think it's called, it used to be called like something cow, like Lazy Cow,
yeah.
I don't know what it's called now, Lazy Cow. But it's like a like study and chill playlist.
Oh right, okay.
It was like,
so what, are the songs really long or really short?
No, they're really short, but it's genius what they've done. It's like I think it's like the biggest playlist on Spotify, like third party playlist.
Okay.
And it's owned by this like record label, and the record label signs all these artists, but they're just like, and they make like 30-second records. And it's like, I think for the Spotify algorithm to pay one stream, they've got to listen to like 30 seconds or like a percentage of that. So like the shorter the record, the more likelihood they have to pay full royalty. So they've just like got this playlist that has like, it's like got like 3-4 million followers, and it's all of their own music, and it's genius for like generating
genius, yeah.
for generating money. It's genius. I think it's called like, is it like, I've got to find this, study, and
that's so funny. I wonder if people like, if any artists come out of it, or is it just like purely like money grab?
I think it's just a money thing. Lo-fi hip hop, maybe. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Lo-fi? No, it's not. I don't know, but yeah, they also have like YouTube channel that just does 24-hour streams. It's a business. Mm-hmm. They spend a fortune on like ads and stuff to get to get people to follow and stuff like that. But it's kind of genius.
It's pretty smart until Spotify changes the algorithm.
That
and they're like,
the
your song is 30 seconds of a 2 minute song or something.
Yeah,
and then they have to go edit absolutely everything.
Or Spotify take off all third party playlisting and then screws us all.
And then we're all fucked.
Yeah. What's I wanna know a little bit more about you. I obviously know nothing about you. So like mm-hmm. what's your background? Like where are you from? Like how did the whole music thing start? I know it's kind of a bait question, but I think
I'll give you the bridge version so it doesn't take too long. So grew up in London, lived in my whole life, always done music, playing guitar first. I always thought I'd just be like a session musician, I guess. Basically, that was like the aim. And like, I naively thought I'd just like come straight out of uni, I'd go and play for like Kylie Minogue, and then I'd go and produce like Beja T. Smith. That was like the plan. And then, obviously it didn't quite work like that. You know, came out, did go to uni, came out and was like, oh fuck, it's actually quite hard to like get gigs and get good gigs.
But
I was luckily enough, like kind of ended up doing a load of like kind of studio stuff as a musician for quite a while. I was working with a guy called Inflow, who's got that project Salt, you know, with Cleo. So it was like kind of when he early on in his thing. So spent quite a lot of time, yeah, basically just doing studio stuff for like a few years, just playing guitar on people's things. Nothing massive, but it kind of got me some good experience. Then I really wanted to do the live thing. I just wanted to tour. So like started playing for artists, and I was like, do you remember SBTV?
Yeah, yeah.
I used to like, basically, I was kind of like the in-house guitarist, I guess, there. Because basically did all of the stuff where they had like rappers and people come in. I'm doing all of that. And then, but I still wanted to do like proper gigs. Like,
how many years ago was that, the SBTV
stuff?
This has got to be
10 years, maybe more. Yeah, showing my age there. Did that. Then eventually like started playing for like in proper bands, doing like the live thing. Then I was like MD in this girl called Ella Air. I did that for like maybe like...
Oh, did you do Ella Air?
Yeah.
I love her music. She's fucking great.
Yeah, she's so talented. Like one of the best things like you'll ever find.
When are you going to get her on a record?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm waiting for my chance. You know, you can't call in favors too early. You've got to wait until there's that moment where you're like, yeah. So
I agree with that.
Yeah. So I did that for like years. We got to like tour the world, which was amazing.
Can you explain MDing to people that don't know what MDing is?
Oh, so yes, so MDing is musical directing. Basically, it just means putting people's live show together. So like, you could be in the band or you could just be putting it together for other people. And it's just kind of like getting all their tracks together, telling the musicians what to play and kind of making the set flow properly and do all that kind of stuff. That's how I know Mitch, because I guess he would have been doing basically exactly the same thing, probably for similar artists at the same time.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, who did he used to do it for? Jesse Ware.
Yeah, yeah. That's who did it that for. Was a wicked point. That was like kind of... Yeah, that's one of those like projects that everyone wanted to get on at some point. Was like the really cool. Basically just doing that, and then kind of reached a natural end of doing the session work where I was like, okay, now it's time to do my own thing and kind of figure that out. And yeah, started producing.
Were you producing the whole time during all of that?
Not really. Like I tried a few times, but I tried to produce like drum and bass like ages and ages ago. It's going for high school. It's like so technical, you know. And it's like when you're like starting, I was like, oh man, like I don't know about this. But like actually MDing was like quite good because you get to see people's projects.
Yeah.
So like I had like the like rudimental stems and like cigala, and you kind of see like how things are put together and you're like, okay, I can do that, you know?
Yeah.
So that was kind of like moving from MD into producing was like kind of like a natural thing.
Yeah.
Then I kind of jumped ship. Like basically me and T, we like got like an advert basically. That's like kind of towards the end of like when I was doing that stuff, and it kind of was enough money that I could basically take like a year off and just be like, okay, let me figure out this stuff. Basically took the year, started like writing with kind of other artists. I was kind of mainly just producing other artists, you know, like kind of R&B singers. That's like what I thought I would be doing, you know, just doing that. Did that for a bit. Then like during that time I had some studios, and T was using I was like letting her use my studio in like the downtime.
Yeah.
We had like a cool spot in Old Street I was sharing my mate. And and then her stuff started to like kick off. And I didn't really understand like that world of like instrumental stuff. I was like, I didn't really know about that. It's like, you know, like I had no idea that you could like make a living doing that. I had no idea there was this whole like alternate world, because like you know about DJs, and then you know about like, you know, kind of like other kind of electronic artists. I was thinking, you know, like your Subtracts and those kind of people, like you know about that, but then it's like, oh no, there's like Bonobo who's selling out this massive thing. There's this whole other world that I just had no idea about. I just had no contact with it. And so she was doing that, and then I was kind of like helping, just playing some bits on her things. And like, because I'd kind of taken a bit of time out, I was like, I'd start working on my own project.
Yeah.
That kind of brings us to here. I kind of started doing my project. I didn't really think it was going to do anything. I just thought, you know, I put some songs out. Maybe it would help me like do some other things.
Yeah.
Like, and then, yeah, I just got like, end up with really good managers, got me a good label. And now it's kind of, yeah, now I'm doing the artist thing.
Now you're doing the artist thing. Is the plan to do the DJ thing, or is the plan to do a live thing?
At the moment, it's like 90% live. Like I've done a few gigs, like we did like Field Day and Lost Village. And,
yeah.
I think it's also, I've done a few DJ gigs and I absolutely love it, but I think because of my music's not really like DJ friendly. Focused music, yeah. It'd be a bit weird. So I wanted to do something initially where at least I could play my own music.
I think starting out as well is by starting out how you mean to go on is like kind of genius. I think there's a lot of people that start out as DJs and realistically want to go live, but, and then the transition to go from DJ to live is really hard. And just to kind of tell the story is like to your fans and followers that you're not a DJ anymore. You're a live act, or you might be a live act and sometimes a DJ. It can be really messy and really hard. And to like do that transition is tough. That I don't like, some people do it. But it's hard. It's a really hard thing. And I think starting out how you have is like pretty interesting, because it's like, no, I'm a live act. You can then go and do a DJ set whenever you want, if you want. But like, I think the whole live thing is definitely interesting.
Yeah, I think that was the idea. I mean, that was like my manager's idea more than mine, I guess.
Yeah.
Because like, I was like, at the time, I was like, man, just fucking got out of this live shit. And now you're making me do it again. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, done it for bloody 10 years. Like, give me a break. Just let me just DJ. But but then that was, I guess it was like a technique, you know, like, you know, to kind of orient it in a little spot where I guess at least, you know.
Well, there's just,
I
not mean, many people I mean, doing it as well in this lane. And I think, like, I hear what you're saying, because I just had a conversation with Dot from London Grammar. And he's like that. He's exactly the same concept. He's like, mate, because he's starting like an electronic project and wants to DJ and stuff like that. And he's like, I don't get why these DJs want to go live. He's like, I've been doing it for God knows how long, and it's not as easy as DJing.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass, man. And if you can DJ your music, it's like DJ it probably.
Yeah.
But if you can't do the live thing, I guess. But yeah, I guess it's just different. I guess everyone, whoever's on each side, will probably look at the other side and be like, oh, I want to be doing that. I think that's probably
Grass is always greener.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah, I think it definitely is that. But, you know, but I do notice the fact if you DJ, you actually get to keep some of the money, some of your fee. Which is that is a one slight difference with the live thing. You're just paying everyone else.
Yeah, everyone else gets. Well, yeah, everyone else gets paid apart from you. Or they get paid first, which I get, but I guess the thing is like, where's the longevity? And I guess that's the question that I ask a lot of people is like,
yeah,
is there longevity in the live thing? Like, if it blows up, if the live thing blows up, like, can you be put into different rooms? What's up, dude? Can you be put into different rooms that you can't do as a DJ? Can you reach a bigger audience? Can you? I don't know, because I don't know. I'd like to get your thoughts. Like, the DJ thing, although there's massive DJs in the world, right? Is it the same as, like, can you headline, can you do Pyramid Stage Glastonbury if you're a DJ?
I mean, I would have probably said no a few years ago, but now I'm like, I don't know.
So it's happened once, I think.
Yeah.
And that was like the masked trio, which was like Fatboy Slim, somebody else, and somebody else. But like,
but I guess it's like, it's the music though, right? I guess if you have, if you're like mainly a DJ, but you've got like some killer music that's crossed over, then I guess you can. Like a Calvin Harris or someone.
Has he, like, though? Has he headlined Glastonbury?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think he has.
Maybe not. But I mean, if he hasn't, that's kind of crazy. Because he's like written like a billion hits.
It's weird to think. I don't think he has, actually.
Yeah, probably not.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. I think it's like the music, though. If you write music like people could sing to, you've got a chance of like those kind of slots.
Yeah. But I guess you then, like, in an argument against that, you look at like Fisher, right? And like what he's doing on a scale wise.
Yeah.
And you're just like, there's that many people that would go and see him.
Yeah.
But then again, you then compare Fisher to Elton John and you're just like in two different worlds, right? It's like you just, you can't even compare.
Yeah. So but I guess it's like, do you even like, because you know, if you think like there's a bunch of artists that we probably listen to that like don't ever get played on the radio, but they stream a lot and they have a good like live show and they've kind of got this whole, probably like most dance acts, I guess, really aren't going to be on the radio that much. But it's like they don't need it.
Yeah.
And if they're like, if you're kind of okay without it, I don't know if you like, you need to be in the like Glastonbury world. Cause there's so many bloody dance festivals, it's like a billion dance. It's like every night of the week,
literally,
you could be out playing to like thousands of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's a different kind of audience.
Yeah.
Just generally, right. Is like the Billie Eilish's of the world. Has a complete different audience to what you and I would have.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Do you think like the kind of like Fred Again, Skrillex, that those kind of acts have kind of like crossed over in that way? Or do you still think they're like,
I think if you compare it to Billie Eilish, worlds apart, but I still think like they are probably just as big in a different scene, if that makes sense.
Definitely
Skrillex and Fred. What Skrillex, Fred Again and Fortet did, they probably have the same amount of power. I don't know, it's kind of weird because Skrillex was as big as
he
was massive. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and like I was talking to Destructor on the podcast, and he was like, what artist can go away for years and come back strong? And we were like, no one apart from Skrillex.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in this world, like Skrillex was away for like 4 years, didn't do anything.
Yeah, that is kind of, it is kind of nuts. But I guess it's like he had his like, you know, some people just have their finger on the pulse and they just like know what's cool.
Yeah.
They can always come back and be like right in it.
Yeah.
Like I imagine if Diplo went away, he'd come back and he'd be a year ahead of everyone else somehow.
Yeah.
You know,
with his army of producers just like
churning
it out.
Yeah. But some people just know what's cool, you know, and it's like, they could figure that out somehow.
I think also when artists like that, they have such big following, they're kind of looked at as the curators, so like what they put out is cool, if you know what I mean. It might not be cool to you and I, it might not be like what we want to hear, but to the mass public is what they want to hear. It's, let's say for instance, like the like real hard techno that's going on at the moment, like the 155s. Like I don't know your thoughts on it, I can't fucking stand it, but like but like there's clearly a huge market for it, because there's artists that are triple the size of you and me put together and selling out warehouses all over the fucking world.
Yeah.
Like there's clearly a demand for it, and I don't get it, but it is what
people love it. What I was thinking, my thought on that, cause I went for coffee with, do you know Randomer? Robin?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know him, like, but I love his music.
So like we actually went to school together, and he's like moved like 5 minutes around the corner from where like I walk my dog. And we had a coffee the other day, and I was asking him, because I guess he's like closer to that world than like anyone else I know.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's like not a fad, but it's something that's going to like be here for like for a little bit, and then people will move out. And I was thinking, like, you know, when Adele turned up and kind of music was like really full and really massively produced, and then she turned up and it's just like someone singing and like a piano.
Yeah.
And it's kind of almost like a like rejection of everything that came before. I do wonder if there'll be like some version of that with like the techno stuff, with all this like 150, are people going to be like, had enough of this shit?
I agree. I totally agree.
I don't know.
I don't disagree with that concept. And I think music's like fashion, right? Music is fashion. It kind of creates like what comes with that music is like everyone's wearing like 90s rave gear again. It's fashionable.
It's the
right?
Matrix.
Everyone's wearing those sunglasses. Like we all like it all makes sense. But again, like when shell suits go out of fashion again, what's gonna be the next music, if you know what I mean?
And
it kind of
what do you think comes first, the fashion or the music with this stuff? Because you know, like you do see it if you ever like see like the runway shit. Sometimes I saw some of those that you know, like the really short skirts girls have.
Yeah,
I remember I saw those a few years ago. I was like, no one's gonna wear that shit. Yeah. That looks fucking nuts. And but then like obviously everyone is wearing it, and you know, and then the music has also gone back to like 90s, early 2000s thing. Like I do wonder, like what starts off these kind of trends?
I don't know, because I think like it might be fashion, but it might be just like one designer might just come out and just be like, "Fuck it, I'm bringing it back." Because all fashion comes around in circles, right? It's like does like 20, 30 year like cycles, and I guess music does as well. I don't know. It's a tough one.
I do wonder what the next, it's interesting to think, like, not that it matters, because realistically you shouldn't be trying to follow any of these trends.
No.
Made a promise to not do that. But, you know, it was just interesting, to think what will be the next thing.
What do you think is the next thing?
Oh, well, I still think the 2000 thing has a bit of time to go. Yeah. Now I've started seeing the American, like, super producers making like, you know, two-step beats and stuff and putting them on pop songs. I still think there's like probably like 3 or 4 years of that stuff to happen. Trying to think what came after all of that. I think, do you remember like early Calvin Harris? I actually think that, and actually I've got like a theory there, because I've heard a few songs that have that like kind of super sore like thing going on.
EDM.
I think it's like that actually will come back in some way. I don't know exactly if it'll sound the same, but I think there'll be a bit of that.
I was actually thinking about this in the gym, because I think like a couple of days ago, Calvin Harris, like I think it was like Ready for the Weekend came on, or maybe the Rihanna record that he did. And I was like, I can see this coming back around, because like at this moment we're in the trance phase, right, as well, where it's like everyone puts a donk on it and it's a hit. But it's going to be interesting, the whole... The next thing. You know what I'm missing is bands.
Yeah.
I'm missing like really good indie rock bands.
That was a good period. It'd be interesting. Like, I think maybe the cost of that stuff though, you know, it's like, I don't even know where people would rehearse these days. Like to put a band together. It's going to look very different if they do come back.
Because like when like the Arctic Monkeys, the Killers... like all of those kind of like indie rock bands that came through, it was like a period of our, like, how old are you? If you don't mind me asking.
Mid-30s, put it that way.
Yeah. Same. Like we grew up in the same era. So it was like, it was definitely.
They're all legacy acts now.
They are.
That's the mad thing. Yeah. They're all legacy acts, like Killers and all that.
Yeah. I've been getting well into, I've started buying vinyl again.
Oh, nice.
I've like been getting into bands again and like listening to all the old Arctic Monkey stuff. And you're like, this is so iconic, this music. Yeah. And I think that's what the thing that I was kind of getting to at the beginning of the conversation, when we were talking about live stuff and going live, is like, I feel like the way DJs release music is very quick. It's very like, just put a record out and hope that it does well. Put a record out, hope it does well. Put a record out, hope it does well. And back then when you, and I know how you release music is very different generally nowadays, and how you make music is very different, but like the band music, even the like electronic band music, Chemical Brothers, Faithless, Fatboy Slim at the time, like Prodigy, everything felt very thought about and like put together and like a plan behind it.
And, yeah. it was an event back, like those when big artists had, I guess it still is with like some artists, you know, if Beyonce puts out a thing, but like, you know, back in the day, I suppose it was like a big event when an artist put out an album, because that was like a couple of years worth of like really hard fucking work with like all the top people and probably loads of money and time spent on it.
Yeah, and now I'm not saying it's worse now. It's just very different.
Yeah, it definitely is. I'd be interested. I don't know, because like what I do miss is, like I was always excited, you know, and like when Rihanna put out an album, I was like fucking sick. Like, or like Drake or someone, you know, it's like big artists putting out albums, like a big event, because it's like you basically hear the best people in the world at doing whatever would have worked on these things. So they're going to be like really sick. I don't know. I guess now it's like, if you spend that amount of time on an album as like a new artist, is anyone going to care? Is it actually going to make it better? You might even make it worse.
Yeah, this is the thing. To be fair, like, I've got to confess something. By the time this podcast comes out, I would have announced that I'm doing an album. So like this, next 2024 is album year for me. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same thing as you. Is like, is anyone going to give a fuck?
But it's, I think your proper fans will, though, Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and those people, like what I've also been thinking, you know, like when you see like the monthly listeners, that's not really got anything to do with like the actual amount of streams.
No.
And it's like proper fans might be listening to shit like 5 or 6 times or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're cultivating that sort of thing, I think like long-term that's probably, a better thing.
Do you have a plan to grow that, to cultivate that, as like, you're still a fresh artist, right? You're still new, still releasing new artists. Like, I don't know what it's like to be you, because I've been releasing music as my artist. I know you have for years as well, but like under other people, when you've been working on other people's stuff, how is it kind of starting a new project in this day and age? I know you don't, you've seen the differences. So like, how does that work?
It's obviously, it's a bit hard because you're basically coming in fresh.
Yeah.
But every time you get a message from someone saying they like your tune or something, it's like, it feels wicked.
Yeah, I bet.
You know?
I bet.
Because I get like, I've got a few, like, I guess the people that find your music early on are like your proper fans, and they'll kind of stick with you for ages. And I kind of still get little videos from people who've like heard the song, or like there's this one dude in Lithuania. He's just really into like one song, which is like the kind of like, you know, the sacrificial song that like no one heard.
Yeah.
But he's like, he really loves that one. So he always sends me videos of him on his, on his boat. But I love it though, because I'm like, man, it's like, there are actually some proper fans out there.
Yeah.
I guess like long-term it's like, I suppose you've got to like build the community, and like there's different ways now, I suppose, like people, there's like Discord and all of that stuff. And I don't know exactly what I'll do when I kind of get to that point. At the moment, it's just about trying to get like enough of a sound that the people who like it like all of the stuff.
Yeah.
And like, if you're into it, you can come in, and like, I'm not going to kind of surprise you with a drum bass tune, or, you know, or some gabba or something like that. That's going to like be weird for everyone. Like, that's not, hopefully that won't happen. And if I do an album, like hopefully people will be able to listen from top to bottom, you know.
How do you do that though? How do you, like, what's your process behind that, of like not alienating people but also being free as a artist without sounding wanky as fuck? But like, how do you do that?
For me, I'm just kind of like, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, Jeremy.
It's fine. Don't put yourself down.
For me, it's like the palette first.
Yeah.
So like, I've got like loads of shit in my studio, and like, because I used to do like bits of ad music, so I could probably have like a good stab at like just about anything.
Yeah.
But it won't be like great. It'll just be like, you know, enough for like a Hovis advert or something. So I'm like, for me, it's like, it's just leaning into like what I'm actually really, what I think I'm good at, which, like, keeping my palette small, so like there's a sound between it, and I'm not like putting in, you know, instruments that don't make sense in the context. And I, having that kind of restriction for me is, I think, is one of the things that kind of helps with the sound. Like if you listen to like a Bonobo thing, it's like he's got a palette, and it's been pretty similar for like a while, like, yeah, samples, real hi-hats, doesn't use like that many drum machines and things like that. And
yeah,
I think like for me it's a similar thing now. I'm kind of like honing in. I'm like, I like this synth, I like this kind of piano sound,
yeah,
these kind of drums, and just trying to like mold things within that world. And like if I step away from that, it'll just be like for a song or two, you know. I'm not gonna, yeah, like I said, I'm not gonna take like a huge massive detour this early. And if I do that, it'll hopefully be on someone else's song, so it's not,
yeah,
you know, it's not something that's people listening to my album gonna be like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
So does it help having limitations?
I think that's like so key, man.
Yeah,
like especially like if you've got too much stuff, and like, yeah, I guess everyone does with like if you got Ableton or whatever, like you've got unlimited synths, you've got splice, you've got unlimited drums, if there's kind of unlimited possibilities, you could do anything. And like having some rules, I think you kind of have to, yeah, really, otherwise your stuff just gonna sound disjointed.
Yeah,
like I guess if you're Diplo, you could do what you want, but you know, at this, when you're early, it's like you're trying to build a sound and a world. I think, yeah, those limitations are key.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing though with Diplo personally, and this is like, he's fucking amazing, but does he have a sound, or is he just an artist? Is he just like a kind of a forefront person where he just can, yeah, release whatever he wants to release? Sometimes it pops off, sometimes it does averagely, right?
Yeah.
But because he's had so many projects in the past that have been very successful, he can kind of just do what he wants.
Yeah. Like I still think of Diplo, so I think of like Major Lazer, really, but then the Major Lazer I'm thinking of is not, probably not what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
I think they're doing like a different thing. I think some artists, yeah, I guess when they get to a certain level, they become like a vessel, I suppose, yeah, for like other people's stuff or like other artists and things that, you know, they're collabing on. But yeah, I guess you'd recognize a Bonobo song straight away.
100%.
Or like probably like a John Hopkins thing, but maybe like you wouldn't necessarily recognize a Diplo thing at this point because he's done so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the difference between like people who are like producers first for other people and like people who have just all purely been artists from the top.
Yeah.
Like if you produce for other people, you probably do like a whole load of shit, you know, and you kind of can easily lose your voice a bit, I suppose. But if you're an artist, it's like your voice is like your main thing. It's all you got, really, you know.
Do you still produce for other people now?
Not really. Like I did one song for this guy called Sui Ascent. Kind of like a house thing, but not really at the moment because like it just makes more sense for me to like invest in my own projects, like my own time. And it's like, you've only got so much time and, you know, and also, you know, financially getting 70% of a song versus 3%, it's a very big difference. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you've got to think like, is it actually worth working with other people that are my level in the background, or should I actually just do it for myself? I think at the moment it makes more sense to do it for myself and like build that kind of sound for my project.
No, it makes complete sense. For me, I used to write for a bunch of people before my stuff kind of popped off, and then just to kind of make money, really. And then I stopped for years, and I'm slowly going back into it, just like more so like helping people out.
Yeah.
Just like struggle with production, but like I know they're going to be successful.
And
I'm just like, just fucking send it here and I'll do this for you, or like,
yeah,
let me fix that for you, or let me do that for you. That's fun.
I mean, that's great.
That's fun for me. Like that, but like, yeah, the whole, I actually do really like writing for other people. I do like it. But the one thing that always gets me is I still bring my production into it. So it still sometimes sounds like a Will Clark record.
Yeah. Would you put your name on it then? If it sounds like you, you wouldn't want to feature on it, no?
No, I try not to. There's like quite a lot out there that I don't, that I've written that isn't for me. isn't a Will Clark record, but I wrote it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing that I kind of going back to what we were talking about with like have limitations. I think for me, that's what I struggle with is sometimes because I'm so used to like setting those limitations, it's actually really hard to kind of step out the box and try something new, which then sometimes means that all your records sound the same.
But then isn't that you just give yourself some new limitations, right?
Yeah.
You say, I'm done with that drum machine. That's it. You know?
Yeah. Do you think that things change though like that? Because I don't know. It's like there comes to a point when, for me anyway, and it's like, how do you...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I can get caught in like a comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then you're like, fuck, I need to do something different. I need to step out. But then getting out of that comfort zone is so easy to go back to what you know.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's because you're good at it. So it's like, you just want to do, it's easy to do the thing that you're good at, or like you've got a habit of like doing a specific like thing all the time. Yeah. No, it's definitely hard to, I guess with all music is kind of like that. Like you kind of go to the same chords or, but like, I've got this, like this Ableton push next to me, which is like kind of cool. Cause if you play melodies on it, it's like this, cause there's no, the notes, you know, you can't really see what the notes are.
Yeah.
It's like a total different experience to playing it on like a keyboard. And like, it's not a huge thing, but it's enough of a little thing to kind of push you out of your zone a teeny little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know what the equivalent would be for you, I guess, if like, you know, your drum programming or something, like, I don't, maybe it's just, maybe it's sound choice, you know, maybe it's like you just sack off, like, feel like I'm going to make the whole thing out of acoustic drums from now.
Would be cool. But then again, you go like listen to like the Chemical Brothers album and you're like, it's Chemical Brothers.
Yeah.
Like if they did something different, I'd be like, I don't really want to hear something different.
Then maybe that's the key then. I mean, if that's your voice, it's like, why mess with it? Like,
just
move it in some other way, I guess. Like, because you're right, it's like, you know, that's your voice.
Yeah.
Because that's all your voice is, right? It's just shit that you keep doing over and over again.
Pretty much, yeah.
Until
people get fed up of it.
Like, well, maybe they'll never get fed up because, you know, you get new people come in all the time and, you know, your old fans, like...
Nostalgia. They just listen to the old shit, don't they, anyway? So
yeah, exactly. They only got about a few years of new listening and then they get stuck.
Yeah.
I did read a thing about how people's like music tastes kind of get stuck at like in their 20s or something, and they just listen to like a small period of music until they die, basically, which I thought was a little bit nuts.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because it's that it makes sense to what we were talking about again with like, what do we want next? What do we see next? And it's like, so I had Hannah Leng on the podcast, and what she's making is literally what her parents listened to because she grew up listening to that. And now she's making that.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, like, so in 30 years' time, when people our age are having kids and we're still listening to that music, are our kids going to be making that music? Like, it's scary to think about that is the case. Why do you think that's just more of a nostalgia thing, that we stick to what we listen to.
Yeah, and I think maybe because, well, my theory, now you've just asked, I hadn't really thought about it, it's probably like that your kind of major life events probably happen like between, say, like, I don't know, like 15 and 25 for most people or whatever. Yeah. It's like, you know, you go to college or whatever, you go to uni maybe, first girlfriends, all of that sort of shit happens probably. And it's probably like soundtracked by like certain kinds of music.
Yeah.
That you heard at, you know, whatever club when you were, or you're 18. And maybe people just get stuck on that shit. And then you get in the real, into the real world, get ground down by your corporate wage bosses, whatever. And then like, yeah, you just stick with that. That's my theory, I think.
Yeah, it makes sense. Have you gotten into anything like recently that you're just like, I wouldn't have ever listened to this when I was a kid?
Yeah, probably like, well, I started listening to Pink Floyd quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, I think during the pandemic, basically, I just really got into weed for some reason. I'm not even, like, really a big smoker. Just like, yeah, man, I should give this shit a go, man. You know? So, like, me and T just smoke a doobie and listen to Pink Floyd.
That's amazing. And,
yeah, because, like, the guitar sounds as well, because I haven't really listened to like any guitar shit in ages, and I was like, man, it's actually really good. And you know, like sometimes you listen to stuff and like it takes you a while, but eventually you're like, okay, I get why this was so massive.
Yeah.
I get why this person is like so sick and why everyone loves it. Like there's just levels to this shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we actually are saying, like, we had this me and T did a song with Ellie Goulding, one of T's thing. And like when the T got back from the session and played the demo, just her vocal, like the demo, I was like, there's just levels to this shit. It just sounds like the radio. It's so unique. Like I can see why she's absolutely huge.
And then Gregory Porter on top.
Yeah, I totally, it's just, you know, when you just hear like legendary voices, you're like, okay, I totally get it now.
Yeah. Do you think that is, because you've listened to, like, let's use that for example for Ellie, because you've heard her voice over and over and over again, or do you think, obviously she's extremely talented and I'm not trying to get you to talk shit on her, but do you think it's, or do you think it's because she is just on another level of talent compared to anybody else?
I think the thing is, can you recognize the voice like with like two notes?
Yeah.
And it's like with her, with like Ella, there's a few singers like that just have a voice where you can hear it immediately.
Yeah.
And it's so unique. I think that's what it is for me. I think with Ellie, like, even if she didn't become like a huge pop star, I think she always would have had like some sort of like, you know, credible career just because her voice is so unique sounding. And they're really, I can't think of anyone else that like sounds like her. I mean, there might be someone out there, but I haven't heard it yet.
Somebody re-singing some of her songs that she doesn't, that they need a re-sing because she won't do a feature. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's just
incredible.
I've never thought about that, but you're 100% right, because all of the big singers that do well are all very unique. Like Florence the Machine, no one sounds like her.
No one. It's just unique. And then it's like they hone it and like they improve their writing, I would assume, and like they just get better because they're in better rooms. And like next thing you know, you have someone with like this sick, unique voice who can also write like amazing tunes and just knows what's good. Like those people, they're not like that common. There's loads of like good singers, you know, who are like all right, but like those kind of unique voices are quite rare, I think. So I think like, but it's that thing of like leaning into what, you know, that your thing is. Cause maybe an Amy Winehouse, she could have like stamped that thing out of her voice, you know, if she wanted to. If she wanted to be like everyone else, she could have like flattened all of those like cool idiosyncrasies. What's the word?
That's the right word, I think.
Something like that, yeah. Close enough. Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's like they could have stamped that out and had like a generic voice probably if they wanted to, but they didn't. They like lent into it.
Yeah, I guess you're right, 100%. I'm trying to think of like who's the new singers that have that voice, or the, Is it also the overall full talent of it all, where it's like they can write a song, they can sing write their own song, and they can sing their own song how they envision it? Because like Clem Douglas at this moment in time is another one, right? Like
she's incredible,
unbelievable. Like I know you've been in sessions with her, and like it's just you.
But that's I could recognize her voice, like when I hear it on the radio now, I'm like, that sounds like Clem. I know she's into that stuff, and like there's like a rhythm that certain people have as well.
Yeah,
it's like she's quite rhythmic, and it's like you just hear it and you're like, okay, that's that person.
Yeah, Hayla's same. Hayla, I don't know if you've heard of Hayla's stuff.
No,
we've done quite a few things together, but like not out. But she did the John Summit record and the Dead Mouse and Cascade record. And her voice, her tone, you just like, every time, I'm like, that's Hayla.
Yeah, that's what you want. I mean, that's kind of why those people do well, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Eventually they like get their thing, they get their shine, whatever route they go.
Yeah, I agree.
But I heard that record. That's a good tune, man.
Which one?
Is it the Cascade one she was on? Yeah, is that the one she was on?
Yeah.
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 You're on that as well.
Yeah. It was supposed to be mine.
Oh shit, sorry man.
No one knows that apart from till now though, so we're good.
You could delete that if you need.
No, it's all good. It's a great record. How do you do that? Is that the goal for you, to create a sound where people know this is a Mafro record?
That's the goal. I think it's like cool to do a bit of everything. And like I said, like used to do that, but now I'm like really keen to just kind of figure out what my sound is and what my thing is, and like just really push that. And then hopefully then other people will want to copy that.
Yeah, yeah.
There'll be that guy on YouTube who makes the tutorials going, how to make a Mafro tune.
I've always wanted somebody to do that about mine. Always. It's such an egotistical thing.
Right. But then it's like when it happens, you can comment and you could be like, that bit was right, but you got that totally wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because it's...
I find that... Go on, sorry.
No, go on, carry on, you go.
No, I was going to say, it's interesting, you know, when people do like tutorials on like their own music.
Yeah.
I'm always like, man, you're like giving away all your secrets here. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you do that? But maybe they're in a more, you know...
comfortable position to give those secrets away.
Yeah, they don't give a shit. They're probably so big when they're at that point. They're like, well, you can't do it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I did a few, but I stopped because they're just long. It's just extra work. But yeah. It's interesting when you see those like tutorials online, because I've watched multiple, and then there's some people that they get and there's some people they don't. I always try and listen to like a Maceo Plex one, because I love Maceo Plex. Like he's one, like production wise, he's probably in the electronic world of DJ world. He's probably in my eyes, the best producer.
Okay.
And I listen every time I listen to like a tutorial on how he does it. I'm like, you're all wrong. Just listen. Like none of you have got it. Like compare this to that, and it's like chalk and cheese.
I've noticed that with them. They're so off.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Yeah. I'd love to get to a point where your sound is like that. Where like people love it so much that they just can't even recreate it.
Yeah. Do you think that's like to do with, you know, like we're saying, like I'm assuming Mesa, I don't really know that much about his music. I've seen him live, but like, is it because he's just absolutely massive and it's like his music's permeated? Or is it, do you think even if he was small, that people would be listening to it and go, that's the guy?
Yeah, I think so. He had like a big record come out that kind of blew him up. And then, but his sound kind of changed quite drastically. Well, not necessarily quite drastically, but like he evolved. I think the sound that you get now is like what I would class as the Maceo sound. And I guess there's no like, you know how like some of our records are quite formulaic to us?
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
like, you know what's going to come next. And that's why it's easily listenable. For me and his music, it's completely the opposite. Where like that, isn't the formula that kind of I know something's going to happen and then something completely else happens that I'm like, whoa, I did not expect that.
Sick. Which is kind of tricking you.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard to do that generally.
Well, it'd be interesting to know what his thought process is when he's kind of making the tunes, because he's probably just got a total different way of looking at it. And maybe if you knew what it was.
Yeah, he's probably like, oh, this is my formula. Like, yeah, let's not.
He's got another one, we just don't understand it.
Yeah, that's it. Completely different. I think he uses quite a bit of hardware as well and like modular, which makes, I think, but which kind of makes sense when it comes to randomness.
Mm. I've got a modular system sitting right next to my thing that, like, yeah, it's fucking sick in terms of like having like a little co-writer next to you that just does weird shit all the time. That's what I use it for.
do you use it often?
I'll be honest, like, it's like probably spent like $3,000 on it, and I mostly use like a hi-hat sound. It's like actually insane, but I use it in every song that
gets your hi-hat sound. To be fair, I use this thing, this drum machine here, and that's just, I just use the hi-hats, nothing else.
I mean, hi-hats important, man.
They are.
It's the key sound. Have you heard that that guy, Shed?
No.
You heard his, I think his other project is like WK7, I want to say, and then Shed. I think I'm probably like saying his name wrong. Yeah, WK7. His production, his drums, it's one of those ones where like no one really knows how it works. And like I've been Googling it for ages, asking people, no one really knows how to get that like thing.
Yeah.
It's that kind of like techno, you know, like the rumble thing, but he's got his own way of doing it. It's fucking sick.
It's Jensen Interceptor. Do you know him?
See the guy.
He also does shit, weird shit like that. Jensen. Yeah, his stuff's mental.
Yeah.
Absolutely mental. And you're just like, they're not always that successful, these people, though. Like, in the grand scheme of, like, building huge fans. Because, which is really interesting with the Maestio thing, because he's massive.
Mm.
But, like, for me, some of the, like, weirdest, but, like, best sounding productions are from people that just aren't worried about the commercial side of things.
I think, it's so weird, man, because I guess if you're a producer, like, the shit we probably really like, or a lot of it, definitely for me, is quite niche.
Yeah.
And like has probably like negligible commercial value in terms of like it'll never stream, but like every producer fucking loves it.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of like, I guess, figuring out, if you're an artist, like, for us, I suppose, figuring out how do we get some of that cool shit in without like alienating, you know, Susan from accounts who just wants to listen to a tune, you know, on her way to work or whatever, or people at the rave, whatever, trying to figure out. Yeah.
Do you think about that when you're writing?
Yeah, a little bit. Not usually, I just do what I want and I just assume that like other people will hopefully get it. But I do remember like on my first like lot of demos, I've had some like cool chord changes. It was like kind of like jazzy.
Yeah.
And like, I remember the A&R guy was like, I'm not sure about that chord, like in the bridge. I was like, and I'm thinking, man, that's like the best bit, you know. You won't get it maybe, but like, that's the best bit. But then it did definitely make me think, man, like, okay, there's a whole world of people who don't listen to
jazz.
You don't want to hear those like really close chords.
Yeah.
Cause even with like, with like T, she hates when I play these like close chords, but I'm so used to the sound of it myself. Mm. You know, when all the notes are kind of clashing together.
Yeah.
I'm so used to that sound, but I know actually a lot of people don't like it. So
I love those chords.
Yeah, same. They just sound wicked, right?
But maybe that's expensive. Why you should do it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, you can't please everyone, right?
No.
You know, and you kind of maybe it's even worse if you try and please everyone, because then no one likes it.
Do you follow a lot of like Rick Rubin stuff at all?
Do you know what? I've got his book, but I haven't started it yet. Oof,
it's a read. It's to be fair, I don't read. I can read, but I don't. I do a lot of like audiobooks instead of reading.
Yeah.
And I listen to his audiobook and it's good, but it's very monotone. It's like I can only handle it in like bite-sized chunks. Yeah, but I follow a lot of his stuff, and like I obviously it's Rick Rubin, he's like one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
But he like really pushes behind this like don't do it for the commerciality. Don't think of the customer. Don't think of the consumer. Think of, is this something that you'd want to show people?
And it's
like something really beautiful. And another on the podcast previously, Destructor, he used to work with him. He like worked at Deaf America. And when they signed like XL Prodigy to Deaf America, and he asked like, you made License to Ill like by the Beastie Boys. Like, why did you do it? And he was like, I just wanted to make music that sounded good in my car.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And I'm just like, fucking idiot. Like, how can you make something that good? But like, I guess that is the thing, is there a level, can you put that to nowadays? Is there something like that where like nowadays is just a little bit,
Oh man, yeah, that is it's so difficult to know, isn't it? Because, and it's like, who's going to be brave enough to, make the next 7-minute song, their 7-minute jam, their single to test this out, you know?
Yeah.
I think my compromise at the moment is just like, basically just doing what I want. And then at the stage where I need to finish it, then like trying to package it down a little bit, just so there's not like 2-minute intros and things like that.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at. So I'm trying to not compromise too much, but doing what I can to just not totally torpedo any chance of of it.
It's interesting because listening to the Clem MK and Sonny Federa record, I don't know if you've heard it.
Not yet.
But it's called MK. What's it called? It's Asking. It got to top 10. In the charts at this moment in time, but by this is out, it'll probably, well, maybe it still is, but might not be. But that has like an intro of like a minute and a half on a streaming. There's no drop for like a minute and a half. And I'm like, I was talking to somebody about it the other day and I was like, this is really interesting how a DSP edit, like usually it's like within like 15 seconds it's dropped and it's like done. But like this was like a breakdown with like a pre-breakdown and then it drops in.
That is interesting. And I wonder what the thinking there, because there was a conversation that and an email chain that went around about that.
Yeah, because we all know that you do like multiple edits, multiple arrangements and just like...
Yeah, you're trying to make it all punchy and like...
Mm.
But that is, I mean, maybe there's, but okay. So the other, so a different perspective, not quite the same thing, but basically I was at like an after party thing a few weeks ago in Ibiza and I put a playlist on just like background music and it was all like, you know, dance shit. And then like a proper song came on.
Yeah.
That was like structured, like, I guess what we were talking about, you know, we're like, you know, short intro straight in type thing, and it kind of killed the vibe. And it did make me think at that point, I was like, okay, that arrangement didn't really work for this
environment,
in this environment, because we don't need that sort of thing. We want something that's just gonna like, you know, just play out and kind of keep the vibe. So I wonder if like, yeah, maybe they're thinking with their thing, you know, maybe like it just needs to be able to play and kind of be a vibe rather than trying to hit you straight away with like hook, 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 hook from the top.
I mean,
I don't know the song, but they could have probably started it with started it with the chorus or whatever, or the drop, and like really kind of made it hooky, but then maybe that would have made it, you know, weird.
Yeah, or like almost like it's trying too hard to be what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we can all do that, right? Sometimes we can be like, cut the intro out and then you listen to it and you're like, yeah, but it just doesn't, it's not the same feel of the record. The record isn't the same feel. It's not the same record.
Yeah. Yeah, because you get rid of the thing that, like, the context of, like, what you're actually trying to do, like, the build-up and all of that stuff.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, the intro is, like, what makes it into what the whole record is. It kind of... It's a tough
one. That's totally right. It's totally right. And actually, you know, I think I've made that mistake, possibly, now we're thinking about that, right? Totally. Cutting intros too short and things, trying to make things, like, radio friendly, where actually probably it doesn't need to be, or it can have a longer intro and set the scene and kind of build the world.
Well, it's also, it's like, are you trying to make a radio record?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is like, and maybe that is the issue with what a lot of people are doing now, is like, they're going into the studio trying to make electronic records for the club, but because they want that commercial success, we cut it.
Yeah.
And you're not actually going into the studio with that, I actually want to make a commercial record. It's, I'm going into the studio wanting to make a club banger, but then have to, like, cut it down to make it a radio success.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. But I mean, people, I guess they have like the long version and the edit, right?
Yeah.
But now,
does the long version ever get released there?
That's a good point. Yeah, you don't. Yeah,
people don't. I think
they just kind of go missing now, don't they?
Yeah, and it gets put on Beatport.
Yeah,
like, who gives a fuck about that? Realistically, in the grand scheme of things, like, yes, it's a strange concept, because I guess not everyone. Like, I can only speak for myself, but like, I'm trying to get radio success. I'm trying to get streaming success, and you kind of have to abide by certain rules to get that sort of success.
Yeah, just play the game. But then, like I said, I mean, sometimes the trick maybe is to go the opposite way, and then you're the one that stands out.
Yeah,
true. Like, the fact that we're talking about, you know, this song having a 1 minute intro is, like, you know, it's different.
Yeah,
and maybe that is something that kind of sets it aside from everyone else's tune.
Yeah,
you know. And maybe people listening won't skip it, you know, that bit, or they won't try and fast forward the song. They'll be like, you know, they'll just know it's that song.
Yeah.
Would you say, like, Beatport is less important for you then? Do you not kind of?
It's weird, because I obviously Beatport and, is it Tracksource, is like realistically the only two places, or like Bandcamp and stuff like that, to like get DJ music. I think Beatport has a level of, like, if you're Beatport number one, yeah, it matters. But I think anything below Beatport number one doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. I think I don't know. I've never had a Beatport. I've had a Beatport number one in genre, but not in overall. And genre didn't really make any difference to my career, if that makes sense. However, I think if you had a Beatport number one, maybe it means more DJs are playing your records, which means that more people are hearing your record, which then might then correlate into more streams, correlate into more radio plays, correlate into more gigs. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think that's the kind of the order it goes, I guess, if you're like trying to get more gigs and kind of bigger, that you need it to kind of have gone around, you know, the streaming services first?
Yeah, I don't know. Because, again, have this conversation quite a lot, where it's like nothing seems to correlate nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like you might have like millions of streams on a record, yet no followers on social media. Or millions of followers, or like, not millions, but hundreds of thousands of followers on social media, and your record streams 30,000.
Yeah.
Or your record, like, I've had it for me, is like a record for me that I had, like, I think like 8 week consecutive specialist radio play on and streaming. I think it took like 6 months to get to 100,000 streams. And I'm fortunate that I tour a lot in North America. So, like, I have a career in music, but like, I've had countless amounts of streams on Radio One, plays on Radio One, yet play twice a year in England.
Right, yeah, it hasn't.
Doesn't correlate over. So I don't really know. Like, I think there's like, what's your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, I don't know yet because I'm so early on that. But I have noticed what you said though, is that there can be like a disconnect between things lining up.
Yeah.
But I guess it's because I imagine if you like drilled right down into like your fan base and all of that, maybe it would explain some things, like, because I know like basically all my listeners are like England, America and Australia, yeah, which makes sense because it's, you know,
yeah,
it's just that kind of sound. So I imagine even if by the time I do have like 100,000 followers, if that ever happens, I probably still won't get any gigs in Argentina or like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah
or like places where they play a lot of their own music, you know, like, yeah, kind of Italy or like I was surprised actually in Australia that I have it, because I know their like industry, especially like their radio, they kind of have to play a certain amount of their own artists, and yeah, it's kind of like a similar thing like in the UK. So I don't really know. I think maybe like having, like at the moment, one of my little strategies is to try and like work with artists that are in like the territories where my things are growing. So it's like,
yeah,
kind of makes sense because at least they'll be into similar music, hopefully, and there'll be like a bit of synergy there. And then also it's like we're both kind of growing in each other's markets. So that makes kind sense. Of like seems to be a thing that might work. Well, obviously you can't do that everywhere though, you know,
yeah,
can't go to Brazil and do that.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And I think it's also working with artists that your kind of goals are the same, right? And
yeah,
like there's no other hidden agendas to it, yeah, all or anything like that. It's just like making music, there's a vibe. I love collaborating, yeah, with people. It's so much fun.
Do you do a lot of collabing? No, there's something you're working.
A very long period of my career, I did everything myself.
Yeah.
But I think after COVID, like I just got bored of writing club music and was just like, okay, I've written too much by myself, let's go and write some other music. And then with the album, did a lot of collabing and working with other people, which is fun, so much fun. I think just having also people like you're a talented musician before producer, right? Like working with musicians and working with people that are like worlds ahead of what I will ever be in certain skills, and then bringing that into the studio is amazing. It's an amazing, like just having, yeah, just sitting with somebody that's just an amazing musician or amazing singer or songwriter.
Yeah.
And just like,
it's easy. Yeah. It's easy when you've got like talented people in the room, it's like things, yeah, move so much faster. Like I didn't really collab that much. I'm like doing my first lots of like kind of producer artist collabs now.
Yeah.
But you do forget, like, you know, music is supposed to be like a collaborative thing.
Yeah.
But it's like we get used to just being in like a room on our own. But it's like when you actually have other people around, you're like, oh, okay, this is what it's supposed to be like.
Totally.
You're just jamming and then like shit comes really quick because you don't overthink stuff. You got someone next to you just going, yeah, that's sick.
Yeah.
Then you go, yeah, it is sick. Cool. Let's move on, you know?
Yeah, totally. Do you ever play the guitar often on your stuff?
not really, you know. I'm not on any of my music. Yeah. Play a bit on T stuff, but like I haven't touched it really in like probably like 4 or 5 years.
Really?
Maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really bad. Like I need to get back into it. You know, I spent like so long doing it and then I've just dropped it like that.
Do you play the keys often? Are you good at playing keys?
I'd say I'm like as good as like a good producer would be at playing keys.
Yeah.
So I could play like I could play everything that I like listening to.
Yeah.
So I could probably get through like a Stevie Wonder album just about. So I'm like,
that's amazing.
There.
Yeah.
Which is like nowhere near like Mitch. So yeah, if Mitch is like 10, I might be like 3. But 3 is good enough.
3 is amazing. I'm like -5. I recently just started having piano lessons again because I'm like, well, I need to up my game.
Yeah. Well, you don't need much, do you, though? You just need a few chords and, like, you know.
I think for me it's I don't want to feel like a fake, especially when I'm going into rooms with, like, amazing musicians and, like, amazing singers.
Mm.
And I'm like, I know what I have in my head, but I just can't do it on the keys.
Yeah, you can't get it out.
That's the thing for me, is just like to be able to just like get it out.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it. Yeah, if you can get to that point, it probably won't take you as long as you think as well.
Yeah.
I reckon to get there.
Just reading music.
And then once you are, you're flying.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know.
And then I'll be a pro.
How far are you into your album?
Done.
It's done. Oh, sick.
Yeah, it's done. It's signed.
Are you saying done now, but then when this comes out, it'll actually be done, or is it done?
No, it's actually done. Well, the only thing at this moment in time, which is, what's the date today? 16th of October. When this, I know this comes out in January the 2nd, I think. Happy New Year, by the way. there's certain artists on there that we need to get resung because they can't be features.
Why? Yeah. What? Because of like timing or?
Because they got so big during the time of, of me writing with them and not.
They're like, yesterday's price is not today's.
Yeah. And they're just like, no, we're not doing any features. So it's like, I've got to respect that.
Yeah, that's fair.
So yeah, but it's done.
That's great, man.
I did it. Took me a year, April to April. I did it.
That's good going, man. So what is it, like 10 or 12 tracks or something?
We wrote about 40 and then cut it down to about 10. Yeah.
Sick.
So.
40 tracks.
Yeah, it was a bit mental.
That's good going, man. Congrats. That's massive.
Yeah, it should be fun. It's going to be an interesting year, though. Again, it goes back to what you were saying. It's like you're releasing, like, it's the conversations I'm having now is how many singles can we release before we, and what records do we choose that are going to be put on the slaughter fucking block that are just not going to be heard in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah. It's all, I fucking hate that conversation. I hate that happens.
Yeah.
You know, that you're like,
because we all know, like,
it'll be our favorite ones, or your favorite track will be the one that everyone like, but the chorus didn't come in it.
Yeah, and there's records that, like, this album isn't a DJ album, realistically.
Sick.
It's like, there's DJ records, of course there is, there has to be, but like, there's records on there that aren't DJ albums at all, and they're my favorite records.
But then shouldn't those be the ones that you release, right? Because people will want to like listen to it at home and like...
That's the goal.
I think. I mean, because I always think, you know, like when Bicep did their album and there was like No Four to the Floor in it. And it's like, that's probably because they're probably thinking people want to... I'll make something for people to listen to at home while they're there. And then when they play the shows, they'll do it with the floor, you know, with the kind of heavy kicks and stuff.
That's the goal, I guess.
I mean, that's a great position to be in, though, man. I hope.
I'll send we'll it find to you.
Out which ones you choose. I'd love to hear I'll it, man. It's really cool, man. That's exciting.
I'll send it to you, man. I will. I definitely. Is the goal for you to ever do like longer form album? Because I know you're working on by this time, I think it will be out, the 5/5 EP. But is that the plan eventually just to go album?
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, cause I still listen to albums. Like,
yeah.
I was listening to, what's her name? Kalela. You heard her album?
No.
Kalela.
How do you spell it?
Like K-E-L-E-L-A.
K-E-L-E. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's fucking sick.
Is it
like,
good?
Both of her albums are like fucking sick. Because they just, it's like all dance producers and stuff. So it's like, it's just really sick production. Damn. And her vocals are amazing. It's just like amazing. But like, you can listen to the whole thing and there's different vibes and, you know.
This album's done well. The Raven.
Yeah, it has. Yeah.
A lot of records in there as well.
But that's what I mean. It's like, there's a lot of, probably more streams on it than maybe like the monthly listeners would suggest. But then it's like people that listen to it fucking just rinse it. Like I rinse their stuff. But.
Yeah, that's really interesting because you go look at her followers, right? And you see her monthly listeners and they're very close in the grand scheme of things, where usually it's like completely the opposite. It's like, I've never heard this. I've never heard of her, but this is really interesting correlation to like look at on like a stat basis, like where all of her records pretty much do the same streaming wise and they're all very strong. but it almost feels like it's all from fans.
I think it is, man. It's like she was, it was quite like a niche project a few years ago, like when I first listened to it. I guess it is still kind of niche, but she's like blowing up on socials. But
is she?
I think anyone that listened to like her first shit would like her second lot of stuff. It's just like she's got this like consistent sound, and yeah, like I think, yeah, because it's a proper like album. When you listen to her music, you don't just put on one song, you put on like a playlist of it.
Yeah,
you know, that's eventually where I'd like to be, you know, is just have a whole album where people want to listen top to bottom. Like,
yeah,
I can put the ballad on it that I want to write and all of that shit, you know. Totally. That doesn't have to have any commercial value in itself, but it will have value to like fans, you know.
I agree.
People who actually like the music will like it, and then I don't have to like, you know, worry about the other stuff.
I think it's also about longevity for me as well. Mm. It's like, how long can you sustain just writing a club record and releasing a club record?
Mm.
Like, and how long can that club record last for you? I don't know. I really don't know what the right answer is as well. I really don't know. But I think for me, when an artist releases an album, it's like almost a statement, especially when it's like thought together. I get it. Like, not a bunch of club records all thrown together and made an album, but like an actual album.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's a statement. It's an event.
Yeah.
It's kind of you telling people like, this is me.
Yeah.
Like, and then it's also like, if you want to, I guess, do like shows and stuff, you just play all of your own, I guess, like if you DJ, I suppose you play all your own stuff anyway, but like if you have an album, you can play the whole album like top to bottom. And like, that's quite a cool thing.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It seems like a different thing for me, I think, than yeah, like just putting a load of random tracks together.
What's your live setup like?
At the moment, I've got like a keyboard, some like pads, like some like finger drum things, like some kind of DJ effect things. And then what else do I have? Like a synth, and then a few laptops. Yeah. So it's like my live setup is it's like mostly a playing setup rather than a like knob twisty one, if that makes sense.
So you're actually playing.
Yeah. So it's actually quite like, I want to say stressful, but it's quite like, there's a lot going. I don't have it. Like, if I need to grab some water, that's just not happening. You know, there's no breaks. Cause if I'm not playing, there's no music. Basically.
Yeah. That's interesting though, because that's very unheard of in electronic.
Yeah, I have noticed that now. I was like, maybe I should have just done the knob twist one there.
Yeah, stressful. Yeah, because it's like, what if something happens? Like, I know you were an MD before, so you know all of that. But like, what's the backup?
So I've got two lappies. So I've got two laptops. So if one breaks, the others right there.
Yeah. And is it just mirroring?
Yeah, so they're mirrored, so it switches over.
Yeah.
Because I've actually had like back in the day like things where like, you know, the playback system went on fire on like an MTV show, and I'm like trying to fix it and set the laptop up, and like the host like come on, like, you ready to go? I'm like, no, fucking no. I mean, no music, by the way. But like, so yeah, so now I'm like mega careful. I've got like backups of everything. So if anything goes wrong, it'll switch straight over. So I'd say that's like a minimum thing you can do these days. Like, a lot of people don't, which I think is interesting. They seem to be all right, but I wouldn't risk it.
That would scare the shit out of me. Just like having one laptop.
It'd be stressful, man, because shit does go wrong. Like, do you know what I mean? It's live music. Like, shit always goes wrong.
100%. And it's supposed to go wrong, because it's just like, it's not plugging in a USB stick and cracking on. I had like a side project with a mate, and we were supposed to do this live show in, it was in California, like San Bernardino. It's like at a festival. And it was, we got there and we specifically did a sound check, because I was like, this is the first live show we've ever done, we need a sound check, like, I don't care. We got there at like 12 in the afternoon before it opened, set everything up, and it, like, we were just kind of doing the knob twister bit, like, live. There was like, I had the drum machine and the keyboard, but like, there wasn't really much else happening, and we'd made it like super idiot proof so that like it couldn't fuck up. Mm. Yeah, it was like 35 degrees Celsius in this tent.
Oh no.
And we started doing sound check, and then the computer just like practically melted. It was like just stopped, and we were like,
oh
okay, we're just gonna DJ. It's just easier.
DJ and mine. Yeah.
And it was wicked. It was wicked. It was great. But like, just,
yeah, that shit, it happens, man. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
We had it one time, like when I was still playing, it was a similar thing. It was at Puckle Pop, and like it was in a big tent, mega hot, and it just made all the analog synths go out of tune. So like the bass player would be playing his Moog, and it's just like off by a semitone the whole thing. It's like there's nothing you can do. You just fuck. I'm just like on the mics, like, bro, just turn that shit off. Just, do you know what I mean? You don't need bass for this song.
No.
And like, I had this guitar one time that, like the tuning heads, they like tune themselves. So you could press a button and it would like tune the guitar in between songs to like save you some time or whatever. But I guess I must have pressed the wrong button and it just detuned the whole guitar. I'm like running out and just playing. I'm like, oh, fuck. It's like, all the strings are floppy. I'm like, oh, get rid of this technology.
That's also the fun side of it, right? Like afterwards you can laugh at it. At the time you're like, oh, it's awful, but it gives you these amazing stories that you can tell everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Like at Glastonbury, I ran out to do a solo and cable came out.
Did it really?
Like, doing this solo, like, I think there's a video of it. I'm just like, just air guitar basically.
Who are you playing for then?
I think that was with Ella.
Oh, really?
The other stage, I want to say.
What was that like?
But like, it was sick, man. Like, but when you get like, when you do big, like big stages, they're all kind of like, kind of the same, I guess.
Yeah.
It's all kind of, you're quite far from the crowd. It means sick, but it's like well oiled by that point, except for my guitar.
Amazing.
But
man,
like, once you've had all that shit, that's why like I don't really get scared now when I do shows, because I'm like, all the bad shit has happened.
Yeah.
Like, nothing can be as bad as those things, and no one died. So
exactly,
it's fine.
And also, like, I think because you've done it all, you know how to prepare for it in future.
Yeah.
Right? You know what not to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you make the same mistake twice, then it's just on you.
And it's on me. Yeah. But it's fine. No one dies. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I guess even with DJs, like if you fuck up, like some people probably hear it, but like most people, they're not going to hear it. They don't care. And like they're on your side anyway, probably.
Half of them are off their tits anyway. Like, let's be honest. Like, yeah, you could, I think it's how you play it out. I can't remember which DJ it was. I think it was like one of the like Kenny Dope or someone like that years ago in an interview said that like he'd purposely make a mistake. I know it doesn't make sense like that, but he'd purposely just like cut the music off. If he was like, if the room is like not vibing, he'd cut the music off purposely and act like there was a mistake. And he was like, but then I have full control over the room.
And
I'm like, that's genius.
That's mega smart. I quite like that.
Yeah. Like just like accidentally act like, because then everyone's looking at you.
Yeah. Sick. So if you've got a show that's not going well.
I don't know if you saw that Boiler Room with like, I think it was like Nina Kravitz years ago. Somebody did it on the Fred Again one as well. But like, I think it was a Nina Kravitz one where this dude just like stopped the record. And like, everyone was a bit shocked, but it went mental, like went fucking crazy. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like sometimes these accidents are just like perfect moments, perfect talk.
Yeah, they are.
Talk about moments as well.
It is like it's moments, isn't it? Because like I was talking to another band the other day, because we're talking about people with their like phones out at gigs.
Yeah.
And I was a bit like, don't you find it like really weird when everyone's just like that in the front, just standing there, just filming you the whole time? And they were like, yeah, it's a bit shit, but they're all catching this stuff for like online. Yeah. And sometimes people catch these really sick moments or whatever, where they do something really cool and then it just goes. So there's like all of that like promotional value to having that moment. So I wonder now if people, when they do their boiler rooms, going to have people come over and knock the...
On purpose.
I don't know what the next one's going to be. There's fucking throw a whole... upend the whole thing.
Do a scream and throw the CDJs into the crowd. Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. We all talk about all that shit 10 years later, you know?
I know. And we all laugh about it. And at the time, everyone was fucking freaking out. But like... everyone laughs about it now, and it's like it does go to show is like you said,
no one died.
We're good, right? No one got hurt. We're all good, and you can laugh about it. But dude, we've just done an hour and a half. That has just fucking flown by. Let's wrap this up. But how can people follow you? How can people get involved in what you're doing?
People can go on Spotify, stream, save. It's Mafro, M-A-F-R-O. Instagram, Mafro, I think, other social media, I think, but I don't really go on those, but follow me on them anyway, because I need help.
Go check his music out, people. It's amazing. Mate, thanks for coming on. I really, really appreciate you coming on, and look forward to catching up in person at some point.
Nice one, mate. Appreciate you. Peace. Thank you.
Keep safe, man. And that is a wrap. Big love to everybody for listening. Please subscribe. Please give us a review. Please share it with your friends. Get involved in the Discord channel. Link is in the description. And I catch you same time next time.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.